coaches and self-coached athletes, I see them typically make one of two mistakes. One where they're just doing no testing at all, and essentially they're giving either themselves or their athletes random doses of different types of movements that they perceive themselves to be weak in, even if they really aren't getting a good understanding of what their limiters are. Random doses lead to random results, so they're not really getting the results they want. Or they test everything and then they kind of fit that into this linear periodization model where everything else kind of gets thrown out. So all the other things that they were good at now become actually relative weaknesses. This whole linear periodization doesn't really transition well into competition prep. And they go from this periodization model, and then they stop doing that and go right into comp prep. And there's no transitional phase there, which that doesn't work well either. So most people don't actually take the time that they need to be able to customize testing and then create a plan for an individual athlete. And then they do one of two things where I see errors. One, even if they create a plan, when things don't go according to plan, which they never do, by the way, they throw out that plan completely and just like go back to kind of the random doses thing. Or they stick with the plan, even though the plan isn't working, because they're like, well, I created this plan, rather than having a plan that's sort of living and breathing and adapts with that athlete as they change, which they are ever changing. So that plan needs to be constantly being updated and adapted for that athlete. And since I see this so many times, I'm going to say it once nice and loud for all my coaches and self-coached athletes out there to hear. Don't guess. Assess. Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. Fitness Movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. Zor Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver incredible training-related content to people just like you. I don't just podcast. I write in-depth fitness articles. I break down common movements in the sport of fitness. I program workout plans, and I offer one-on-one coaching for competitive and recreational athletes. And the best part is most of what I have on ZorFitness.com is totally free. Check out these resources by going to ZorFitness.com. That's Z-O-A-R Fitness.com. Hope to see you there. And we're back to my rant on fitness assessment. So today I'm going to be taking you through my 6-step process that I use for my athletes, taking them through all the way from actual assessment itself to performance. And that could be just be life if you're just a GPP athlete, or that could be actually performing on like a given date if you're a competitor. Either one of those is perfectly fine if it's somewhere in the middle, if you're kind of doing local comps and more of that sort of thing, and that's perfectly fine, or any variant within that. And you're going to have to figure out how to adopt this model to you, if you're self-coach or your athletes, if you're the coach. The goal here is for you to not fall into the pitfalls of either the person who's giving those random doses or the person who is testing everything, and you're actually wasting a lot of your time because you don't need to be testing everything all the time because you're working out day to day. There should be a lot of information right there. So what do you actually need to be doing? So that's some of the things I'm going to be covering here. So I'll go through each of these 6 steps really quickly, and then I'll just kind of give you the outline, and then we'll jump into it. Step number one is the actual assessment itself. And you can do this during onboarding. You could do this during a new kind of training cycle or like a training year, kind of outlining the year. It could be when you first start working with the athlete. It could be when the athlete joins your gym. It could be when you just want to reevaluate because you feel like you're not making progress. Whatever the kind of the trigger or natural flow is going to be. Step number two then is to actually identify your training priorities. So the things that you want to focus on based on your assessment. Step number three is to create a training year or an outline for a training year based on that. And it's going to change over time, like I kind of alluded to in the intro. But what are your focal points, the things that you want to increase priority for during your training year? And how's that going to change and kind of pivot over time? Then we're going to go through a 3-step process with those limiters. So first, actually addressing the limiter itself in stage 4, and then we'll bridge in the next stage. This is part of the limiter bridge performance model. And then lastly, we'll actually go to performance. So there's that bridge of actually kind of closing down the gap between addressing someone's limiters and having them go to competition prep. And then performance is that competition prep phase. And then when you get to the end of it, you can either make adjustments and continue, or you can just repeat that cycle, start going through testing, and then hit all of those steps once again. Okay, so let's get into it. Step one, assess. Rather than keeping this vague, I'm going to be saying that we're going to be testing for a CrossFit competitor, and realize that this testing protocol is going to get amended and adapted, whether this person's GPP, whether they're a master's athlete, whether they're a teen athlete, whether they're male or female, and all these different variants that someone could be. But we'll just keep it simple for now and kind of general, because I still think it's useful, and again, just realize that this plan is going to get adapted for an individual athlete. So a few things that I'm going to be looking at. Number one, the first thing I want that athlete to do, if I know that I'm going to be working with them, I'm going to say, okay, we're starting now over the next 2 weeks, record every single thing that you're doing in the gym in terms of like write it all down and then send it to me where I can go through and look at each of your sessions and just see what you're kind of doing day to day, where I can look at your volume, where I can look at the types of pieces that you're doing, where I look for possibly holes of like, oh man, you haven't overhead squatted at all in these 2 weeks or something like that, right? Where it's like a movement thing. You can learn a lot just from looking at someone's day-to-day habits. Next, I'll actually look at someone's lifestyle. So things that are outside the gym. In this case, everyone is going to be spending more time outside of the gym than they're spending inside the gym. And this is true for even people who are games athletes who are spending 6 hours or more in the gym. Like, yeah, they're still spending majority of their time outside. So we have to optimize that first if we want you to be adapting and responding to the exercise that we're giving you in the gym. Things I'll be looking at. Just their baseline activity level, like how much do you move throughout the day? What stressors do you have outside of training? So like, do you have family responsibilities? Do you have a job that's really stressful for you? Are you getting up late at night because you have a little kid or things like that? So everyone has these stressors. What are yours and how severe are they? And everyone has a different level in how they respond to those stressors. And you could spend a ton of time there, but just getting a baseline idea of what are your stressors outside of the gym? Next, I'll look at their nutrition. I get a log. I could just have them give me a description of what a day might look like for them. Like, yeah, for breakfast, I typically have this, this, or this. For lunch, I have this and this. And just starting to get an idea of, okay, what is this person? Is nutrition a limiter for them? Is nutrition something that we need to focus on more? How does that fit into this overall picture? Next, I'll look at hydration. So just, are you drinking water? How much of that are you drinking? What else is kind of falling into that? Are you drinking a ton of coffee? Are you drinking a ton of alcohol? Like, what other factors could be influencing your ability to move with quality and intensity in the gym? I'll look at sleep, both the quality and the quantity that they're getting. I'll look at their movement history. We could say like, okay, did you play any high school sports? Were you exercising regularly before you came into this? Okay, how long have you actually been doing CrossFit? What other sports have you played in the past? Do you play anything recreationally? What have you done to kind of keep yourself going? Other questions I'll ask are, have you had any injuries in the past that could affect the way you move now? Do you have any current limitations, little nagging injuries and things, even if it's not something where like you couldn't train or something like that? Like, oh yeah, my shoulder bugs me once in a while when I do snatches or something like that. Any information that I can get about that athlete when they're coming in to do onboarding, the easier it is for me to program for that athlete. The hardest person it is for me to program for is when I don't know them well and they don't give me good feedback and I don't have constant conversation with them. If I know a person really well, it is easier for me to write them a program. So then next, we actually get into the fitness part of it, the part where you're actually in the gym doing all these things. Basically, I send them a really big list of a whole bunch of exercises that they'd see frequently in CrossFit style workouts in this particular case and say like, hey, do you know what your one rep max is for these? Do you have any other information? Like, have you ever done 10 rep maxes? Have you ever done rep maxes for gymnastics? I'm not looking for necessarily perfect answers here, but oh yeah, I know 3 weeks ago that I did a 2 rep max deadlift in class and this is what it was, or this is what my 5x5 strict press was the other day, or did 15 kipping chest to bar pull-ups in a workout and that didn't blow me up too bad. Like just things like that, trying to get a good idea. And if they've done formal testing in the past, when were those dates? What were the results of that testing? Also, if they've done the open, go to their open results and compare their results relative to everyone else in the world. I can see, oh yeah, they were, 1500th on this workout and they were, 15,000 on this workout. So clearly whatever that workout was, they have a hole in one or multiple elements of that workout. The open and online qualifiers where you have a leaderboard and you can see where you rank on all these different things can really lead and yield some helpful results as you're actually starting to look into assessment for that athlete. So after I have all that information about them, all that self-reported, I mean, I might have to do a little bit of homework, but really that's that athlete coming to me and say, this is all the information I have for you. At that point, I can decide, okay, what things are kind of holes where I really don't have a good picture of what this athlete needs in a particular area, or you know what, I think this could be a potential hole in this athlete's game. Let's do some more investigation in that particular area. So within that, there's kind of two different elements I'm going to focus on. There'll be strength and gymnastics. So I'll be doing mainly one rep maxes for strength and mainly rep maxes for gymnastics. That'll be kind of the first part. And then the second part of that is energy systems. So this can be cyclical, where it's just one single element or modality. So for example, rowing, I might have them do a max pace row and then do a 5K row. And that's just the spectrums of that energy system. And that'll really yield some helpful results to see if they're a more powerful athlete or an enduring athlete as a whole. And then I'll also do sport. So sport is essentially, in this case, Metcons, or doing certain types of four time, rounds for time, AMRAP, like those sort of workouts, and giving them the type of workouts that they would see in competition and seeing what their limiters are or how they'd compare to other types of athletes. Now, I have a number of benchmark workouts that I will use and give athletes so that I can compare them to other athletes that I've coached in the past and see where they stack up on different types of workouts. If I just watch them move and kind of see them and what they're doing through that workout, being able to really develop a fuller picture of what they need as an athlete. Ideally, as they're doing these tests, I want them to film, especially in the shorter ones like the strength and gymnastics, but also if I can be there to watch them do an energy systems test, that's ideal. And when I see a movement fall where I just see them start to break down a certain way, often I realize that, okay, in that particular area, I need to do a sort of a deeper dive or deeper investigation of what's going on. So for example, if they have a lateral hip shift during squats, okay, let's go in there and see what's going on. Maybe I'll give them a whole new battery of tests to help them address or kind of get a better assessment of that one movement fault. So I'm going to have them do different types of Bulgarian split squats and have them weighted and do a unilateral test. So I'll have them do one side and do the other side. Do like the weak side first and then see if they can match it with their stronger side. Just getting a better idea of what's going on with them as a whole in the system that is their body. And this leads me to my last point, where I don't want them to do everything. Like if they've already done a bunch of rep maxes and all these things and they already have all that, even if it was a year ago, like a lot of that information is still relevant and they're still going to have a lot of the same general characteristics and general strengths and weaknesses that they did before. And I just want as much information from them as I possibly can. Then we'll move on to step two. Step two is identifying training priorities. And I believe a lot of people think that assessment step one is going to be the exact same thing as your training priorities. Like, okay, you've done the assessment. That is your training priorities. Like your weaknesses there are going to be your training priorities. And that is often true, but it's not always true. So for example, say an athlete had a really bad time on a 5K row and they're like, well, you know what? I just need to do longer pieces all the time. Well, are you also having issues and limitations with a 5K run relative to like a 100 meter sprint? Are you still having issues within that same energy system? If so, okay, then it's an engine thing. But if not, where you were able to actually have a really good 5K run, okay, maybe it's just an upper body endurance issue. So we can get more specific as to what the training priorities need to be. And a good coach is able to distract the things that are truly limiting the athlete, the things that they need to prioritize in their training versus just what are you currently not as good at from a test result standpoint. Those are two different things. And to be able to decipher what is what here is extremely important. Let's talk about categories of limiters. Different lenses essentially as to how I'm going to be looking at someone's test results. So let's talk about four categories of limiters for athletes. So basically four different hats or lenses that I'm going to be looking at their assessment and their results through. Number one is their movement categories. So weightlifting, gymnastics, monostructural or cyclical movements, which one of those is an athlete weak at? Like if they're weak at all of like their one rep maxes, okay, maybe we just need to have more weightlifting exposures, or maybe your technique just really isn't good when you're barbell cycling or whatever the issue is. Or if it's gymnastics, okay, your upper body pooling just isn't great. Like you're fine on like the midline stuff, like handstand walks, toes to bar, you're fine there. But when it comes to the actual pooling, muscle ups, chest to bar, pull ups, anything like that, that's where you struggle. So just identifying these different issues. Someone just doesn't have the prowess on the monostructural, like maybe on ergs that they do on the other two movements. Okay, maybe you're a super efficient, good mover. You're able to use a lot of elastic energy and be efficient with weightlifting and gymnastics. But when it comes to just producing a lot of energy and force over time in like a cyclical erg type environment, okay, that's where you struggle. So that's one potential way to look at it. Another way to look at it would be movement patterns. So I'm going to go through, I think I have six or seven. First one is squatting. So squatting as a general pattern, it could be overhead squat, front squat, back squat. Maybe all of those are weak potentially. We could look at hinging. So power snatch, power clean, deadlift. We could look at pressing. So strict press, push jerk, split jerk, handstand pushups where you're kipping from a deficit from power lets. We could look at wall balls. We could look at burpees. All of those would be pressing. And CrossFit in particular has a lot of pressing and squatting. We could look at pooling. So here I mean strict upper body pooling, We're going to go there. Ring row, pull up, chest to bar, muscle up. Midline work. GHDs, toes to bar, handstand walks, or any kind of static overhead position where you're having to lock out a weight and keep it there. Things like overhead walking lunges, anything like that. Midline. And then rebounding. So box jumps, double unders, running, those sort of movements. Three, energy systems. So typically here, I'll look at sprint or sustain. So like a really short, high effort or longer, more enduring effort. I go to the spectrums because number one, it typically yields more extreme results. Like you'll see an athlete tend to be more either a sprinty type athlete, really powerful, and then not as great on the sustain side or vice versa. I just want to polarize that as much as possible so I can really see what's going on. I actually do less middle ground testing. So like that would be more like lactic work, because either way, if you have a sprinty athlete, you can get them to start to extend that direction. And if you have someone who's better at sustaining, you can get them to move that way too. But I think there's more obvious implications for someone's really lacking sprint or sustain on the far ends of the energy system spectrum. And then lastly, we'll look at general qualities. And that's kind of like a catch-all category where it could be mobility, where their positions aren't very good, their joints maybe lack range, they're just having issues or pain or other limitations there with their mobility or positions. It could just be a strength limiter. And this could be where they're, as they fatigue, they aren't able to produce strength anymore. So maybe it could be actually sort of like an issue with state. It could be where they're in high tension environments where their blood pressure spikes and maybe they occlude, they'll actually not be able to produce force anymore. Or maybe it's more of an aerobic, alactic environment where because they don't have aerobic prowess to be able to go out and produce a lot of sustainable energy, then they aren't able to, in an alactic environment, produce kind of a battery effort, whereas like 85 or 90 or 95% of the one rep max and come back and recover and then do that again. So they're not able to clear fatigue in that environment, which that's actually more of an aerobic limiter. We could look at a general quality of skill. So they're just lacking in certain dumbbell skills. They're not efficient in barbell cycling. They're not efficient in being able to go through multiple reps of gymnastics in fatigued environments. They're not able to keep their heart rate down during double unders. They're not able to whatever that particular skill is. And lastly, repeatability. So it could just be where this person doesn't have the sustainability and it's not necessarily an aerobic limiter as much as it is maybe a mindset where they kind of have the sprint mindset. They'd rather just fly through a bunch of reps and then rest afterwards. So it could be an issue with pacing. It could be an issue with state where they're blowing up a little bit early and that's the reason why. It could be an issue with breathing mechanics during certain movements or just during dynamic contractions as a whole. And those are kind of the four movement categories that I look in now actually identifying this athlete's training priorities. Movement categories, so that's weightlifting, gymnastics, monostructural. Then movement patterns, squat, hinge, press, pull, midline, rebound. Energy systems, again, I'm looking at mainly sprint and sustain. And then general qualities, mobility, strength, skill, repeatability. And those are just examples in that last one. Okay, let's move on to step three. So step three is creating a training year outline. So we've looked at now what focal points do we need and how now are we actually going to increase doses of those focal points throughout this athlete's training year, where this can actually be appropriate for that athlete given certain periods of time within their yearly training context. So I plan on doing an episode on this topic in the future, but for now, I'm just going to keep it really simple and we're just going to use the example of a CrossFit competitor who has a known event in the future, a set date where they say, okay, it's March right now and we're going to peak for an online qualifier in November. And let's just use that as our example. What you're going to do for this athlete is you're going to work backwards. And this athlete could be yourself, by the way, but you're just going to work backwards. So you're fitting the limiter bridge performance model outline onto this. And we're basically going to be saying, okay, for this amount of time, we're going to be working on your limiters. For this amount of time, we're going to bridge that performance. And then for this amount of time, we're actually going to be going into competition prep and working on performance for the actual sport. So you're going to leave 2 months for competition prep or that performance part of the model. So let's say you start in September, you run through October, so you can peak in November for that online qualifier. I'm not going to go over actual competition prep, what that should look like today, but just realize that, okay, maybe 6 to 12 weeks or a month and a half will be a kind of a good range for that. And then you'll leave another 6 to 12 weeks, or again, maybe month and a half for bridging performance. That is that transitional period between actually working on someone's limiters and bridging them so that they can use that within a context of competition. And let's just say we'll leave July and August for that. And then the question that you have to ask is how much time does that leave us with? So in this case, it would be 4 months, March, April, May, and June is when you can actually spend on your weaknesses or those specific limiters and focal points. So that's what you're going to be looking at next. So you kind of created a really rough outline there, and you're going to begin then fitting training cycles within each of those segments based on the time that you have. So then we'll move on to step four, the actual addressing the limiters. So in the limiter bridge performance model, this is step one. This is just a training block. So if we think about it that way, what aspects or how are we going to address someone's weaknesses within a training block? And this is where I want you to really control this environment. And it's perfectly fine if this doesn't replicate sports specificity super closely during this time of year. And that's okay. We're more focused on addressing specific limiters for that athlete and bringing them up so that when we transition them over, they have the capacity now in that specific thing. So we're going to be pulling out individual qualities and working on them sort of maybe not in an isolated environment, but in a much more controlled environment where you can say, I know very well where you're at in terms of intensity, in terms of volume, in terms of percentages, all of those sort of things, rather than just kind of throwing them into Metcons and hoping for the best. This is where if we oversimplify it, it's if you are worse at the field at X, you're going to be doing a lot more of X and things that lend themselves to improving X. For example, let's say that you aren't as good at weightlift. In this case, I mean strength and clean and jerk. And maybe it's specifically the reason you aren't good at snatch and clean and jerk is because of your leg strength. So like you're coming out of the hole and you just lose speed and you're not actually able to effectively use your legs. And it's not because of a movement fault, like you're rounding your back or something like that. Like it's truly a leg strength limiter. Okay, then maybe we'll have you do something maybe a little bit less sport specific, like a back squat, but that's going to lend itself very well to you being able to front squat or overhead squat if you do it within a certain context and technique. And if we add accessory work and possibly isolation work to that for addressing specific weaknesses in muscle groups, now we're really onto something. So say that this person is working more back squat and they're also going to be working more posterior chain because they just kind of get away from that in their lifts. Great. If we give them more doses of that particular exercise, maybe we give them more back squat, we give them more split squats, and we give them more maybe even like box squats and like reinforcing position. And there could be endless scenarios here, but realize that it's really not that complicated. Like if you're not as good at X, you're going to be doing more of X. You're going to be giving more of your training time and adaptation currency to X. So we could do the same thing for ring muscle ups, where we're giving someone drills, progressions, strength work, and there'll be more regulated reps and sets. We set the rest time, we set the work rest ratio, we control all of those factors and variables to give them the exact dosing and the dose response that we want. We do the exact same thing if the limiter is someone in a high tension environment where they need to lift the heavy weight and have it be repeatable. So we could give them aerobic alactic work. So like maybe just row easy for 15 minutes at or 5K pace plus 30 seconds. So a really easy pace. Every 90 seconds or 2 minutes, you're going to jump off and do two cleans at 85%. Something like that where it's really heavy. It's aerobic and it's alactic, that combination. We could give them more battery work where it's like touch and go percentage work or something like that, where you're doing multiple reps in a high tension environment, but you're also starting to couple that in sport, but you're also doing that in very controlled environments. We could do the same thing for maybe it's a time domain. Maybe it's a longer time domain with a cyclical component. So your endurance work for specifically cyclical, let's just say 5Ks, isn't as great. So we give you more of those sort of doses. We're starting to increase volume on just endurance cyclical work, start to give you a little bit of high-low intervals. We'll give you some ramp ups, some other things. But again, it's all very kind of simple and less complex in a way, because that is how you start to actually track and measure performance in these specific variables. If you let it get too complicated, you really can't be able to tell what's actually improving, if the athlete is moving in the right direction, if these things are progressing in the way that you want them to. Next, let's move on to bridge. So here we are bridging the gap between the limiter cycle and the performance cycle or competition prep cycle. So if we take that athlete who is having a leg strength limiter, in the limiter stage, we give them really select doses and really controlled environments. So we'll give them back squats, we'll give them accessory work, we'll give them maybe some isolation work. We're going to give them addressing specific limiters in a very controlled environment. Whereas in a performance stage, when they go to compete, who knows what they're going to see. It could be any number of things. So let's just say it's battery squat cleans and a triplet, and that's going to involve their limiter. So we need to get them to be going that direction with their physiology. But at the same time, we can't just throw them right into that. That's not going to work. So we have to bridge the gap between those two. And a really good example of that kind of performance aspect would be something like 19.2, for example, would be a really good one, where it was battery squat cleans and a triplet. So it was double unders, it was toes to bar, and then it was ascending squat cleans. So it involves their limiter, but it's not in that controlled, simple environment. And you don't know what the test is going to be beforehand. It's not like you know, oh yeah, thanks for announcing 19.2 like 2 days beforehand. Like, it's not like you got it a year before. So we can't base all our training off that. We can only kind of assume and see what has been done in the past and start to bridge that gap. What could we have that athlete do if we don't know what they're preparing for exactly? We can start to give them all these different exposures as to what they might see, but start to do that in a way that is controlled. A good example would be something like, instead of back squat, maybe we'll go to front squats, and maybe we'll add in chest to bars, like a gymnastics movement. And we'll do that as an alternating EMOM to kind of simulate a fatigued environment, but not do it to its out of control. We know what their front squat volume is going to be. We know what their gymnastics volume is going to be. We know the rest of work time about. We know all these things. So it's a much more controlled environment. I could use the example again of like that rowing easy. And then every 90 seconds, they do one heavy clean. And you know exactly what percentage that clean is going to be at. And you can control that and manipulate that and progress that week to week, where maybe you're just adding a little bit of time. You're adding a little bit of density. You're adding a little bit of potentially percentages. So you can control all these factors and have them start to move towards that sports specificity, but do it in a way that's still controlled, where you still know the work rest, you still know all these different factors that are going to be influencing their performance. We could do the same thing for an athlete who's struggling with muscle ups. In this stage, instead of maybe just simply working on sets and reps, we maybe start to add density work. We do more work relative to a certain amount of time. And we can also not just do muscle ups on their own in isolation, but we can start to add other elements in there, but keeping the layout and volume and movements controlled. So a good example would be every 3 minutes for four sets, they're going to be doing 1 minute air bike at their 10 minute test wattage, and then directly into 60% of their rep max of a set for, let's just say, ring muscle ups. That would be 1 minute at, say, their average test wattage was 325 watts for male. So they hold that for 1 minute. They jump off and immediately go into, say, if their ring muscle ups was a max set of 20, they're going to do 12 ring muscle ups. And they'll probably rest, I don't know, that's probably going to take them 90 seconds. They'll rest the rest of that night, another 90 seconds until they get to the top of the 3 minutes. They'll repeat that for four times. That would be a little bit more of an advanced example, but I still think it's sort of the model that we're looking at here. Controlled doses, you know exactly what pace they're going at on the bike. You know exactly how many reps they're doing for ring muscle ups. You know about the work rest they're going to have. That's the sort of conditions we want to control in this bridge segment. Another good option for this athlete who's struggling with muscle ups could be 8-6-4-2, four time, burpees to a 6-inch target, unbroken ring muscle ups, and then they rest 5 minutes and repeat it. You know exactly what the dosage is going to be. It's not super complicated. It's just a couplet and they're not super interfering. So you know a lot, but you're starting to bridge that gap. And that'll be closer to a more of a sport. Like that's getting pretty close to comp prep in this sense. So say the athlete's dealing with cyclical sustainability issues where they have that sprint mentality, AKA they have pacing issues. So we could do something like this. I've done this for many different athletes where they do 5 rounds for time, rest 90 seconds between each round, but they must negative split each round or they're done. They terminate, like they're done with the workout. You can't keep going. The workout would be, let's just say, 24 calorie row, 12 burpees over the rower, and then another 24 calorie row. So say round one, they did it in 330, round two was 304, round three was 257, and then just say round four was 312, where they increased their time. They're done. They don't get to do round five because they didn't pace it well enough. So rewarding the pacer in this case because they're having pacing issues. That's very potentially similar to competition, but you're not just doing rounds for time, right? It's not that simple, or in this case, really that complex. You're controlling the different environments. The goal here is for movements to still be able to change over time. They still want to be starting to move towards these dynamic contractions that we're going to see in competition. And for that athlete who just did that negative split workout where they have to stop, they can do it where this is going to be the exact same format every time, where you have to do five rounds for time and you have to do it in descending time or you're done, and just starting to learn how to pace. And we can start to move from really simple contractions or like erg work towards more so dynamic contractions, start to add more gymnastics, more layers, more complex movements. And we could also do things like, okay, rather than starting at like an RPE 4 where you're kind of gaming it a little bit and then just like making it really easy on yourself, you have to start at RPE 7, where you have to start at X amount of, maybe it's your 5K time trial pace per 500 meter, and then you have to increase that each round. So you're just creating a starting place for that athlete and then having them move from there. And there's a lot of different ways to control these different factors to get the result from that athlete that you want. And then 6, we'll move on to performance. And this is now putting all the pieces together into competition prep. So this is where we're doing more rounds for time, more AMRAPs, more lifting under fatigue, more kipping movements, refining skills, we're giving higher volume doses, we're giving different frequencies of novel movements. We start to remove some of the general strength. We put a lot less focus on accessory work. We put less focus on long, easy cyclical work. And we increase sports specificity as a whole. And then you pull out volume at the very end, and then you go out and perform. So that's essentially what comp prep looks like. I'll probably talk more about that in the future. I'm going to keep it short and sweet today. But once you're done with comp prep and you've actually prepped and you're ready to go, you rest, you compete, then what? You just repeat this cycle again. So you go back to step one with just the things that you need to retest. You analyze the results from that athlete's performance. You get a better picture of what's going on with them as a whole. And then you say, okay, where do we move from here? And if you go through these 6 steps and you hit each one of these, and then you reassess and reevaluate where you are, and then decide what limiters you need to bring up and how you're going to address those and create training priorities, create a template, go through that template, then you're going to make positive change. You're going to bring up your relative weaknesses. And it's all stemming from the fact that you did not guess, you assessed. Thanks for listening. And as always, stay the course. If you enjoy the show, do me a huge favor and give the fitness movement a positive review. And as a way to say thanks, I will send you the 12-week workout plan of your choice from my website. Simply email me at ben@zorfitness.com. That's ben@zorfitness.com, with Zor being spelled Z-O-A-R. Thanks in advance. Hey, it's Ben again. And one of my main responsibilities, besides producing content like the fitness movement, is being a coach. I work one-on-one with athletes to create an individualized plan to help them reach their goals. So let's say you hire me. The first thing I'll do is learn about you. We'll jump on a video call and chat. And this is something we do every training cycle. It becomes a very regular part of our schedule, which allows us to stay on the same page with things. I'll also take you through an in-depth assessment to really get a very accurate, detailed look at where you're at and what your specific limitations are. Then it's my job to create a plan to help you achieve your goals. In other words, taking you from where you're at to where you want to be. And here's the thing, is that I will be 100% the person to program every workout for you. And when you send me film and tag me in your videos, I'll be the one providing adjustments for your technique and cues to help you correct your movement errors. So you pay me month by month and there's zero commitment. You have nothing to risk and all the gains to make. Sign up today by going to zorfitness.com/coaching or email me at ben@zorfitness.com.